Today on Make the Dough Rise, we will take a look at Doge. Is this going to solve all of our problems, or will this be the end of us? Stay tuned.
It's time to Make the Dough Rise, the financial podcast with Brian Doe.
Hey, it's another episode of Make the Dough Rise. Walter Storholt here alongside Brian Doe. He, of course, is the certified financial planner at Livingworth Wealth Advisors, serving the Lake Country and beyond, based in Greensboro, Georgia. More than two decades of experience in the financial planning world. And we've got a great episode today, Brian. We're all dealing with, you've got a little bit of sneezing going on. I'm getting over a cold. Even producer Andrea's got her cup of tea and a little sore throat this morning. But we're going to push through because we've got this important topic to talk about today.
Yeah, clearly it is the depths of winter, and but the good news is spring will be right around the corner, and we can get our sunshine and vitamin D back up soon.
There you go. Absolutely. We can always keep our fingers crossed for that. Even though the groundhog saw a shadow or whatever, and it was going to mean lots more winter. You know, we got actually a little false spring in Colorado. So even though I got the cold, we had like a really nice weekend of temps in the 60s. So
yeah, we had the same here for a little bit.
It's pretty nice. After a little bit of snow comes through, then you get the clearing. But hopefully the same thing will happen with being under the weather. Nonetheless, I'm excited for today's topic because obviously this has been dominating the news, all the talk about Doge. And you have some people that are really excited about it, others that certainly see it as you kind of depicted here, the devil or the savior. It is two very different takes on its impact, on its importance to the country right now. And a lot of people have very strong opinions about this. And I know that you're one to typically step back a little bit and say, okay, well, let's just strip all of the emotions out of it and look from a more practical standpoint. And I hope we get to do that a little bit on today's show.
We will take a look at all of it. And we've got a few topics we'll breeze through, and then we'll dive into the big ones for sure.
Yeah, should be pretty good. Other than Doge on our topic today, everything else going well in your world, my friend?
Yeah. We're getting ready to go skiing out in Utah for a little bit. I'm taking one of my daughters out there with some friends. And then we've had just stuff going on with the kids, all different directions. One got involved with mock trial, and they've won their district and are headed to state competition. That's been
fun. That's pretty cool.
Spring musical and ThesCon. And then we've got just all the first-year college stuff with Hannah. So
nice.
You think they're going to grow up and quit dominating your calendar, and you find out they're just as busy and bigger productions than ever. So
yeah, maybe after the wedding days, eventually, perhaps they'll stop dominating the calendar.
Exactly. Hopefully.
I don't know. then you'll be a grandpa before too long, Brian,
right.
All of a sudden that'll dominate your calendar.
The circle of life.
That's right. Well, Brian, I know Doge is such a large topic, and we're here at the beginning of a new year. Perhaps we need a little reset, or at least what's catching your eye, or what do we need to cover to give us a basis for this conversation today?
Well, a couple little things, just sort of housekeeping notes. Vanguard has some new ETFs out that give access to short-term treasuries and provides a very nice dividend. So if anybody out there is worried about savings accounts or banks, bank savings accounts and the like, even CDs, there are some good new ETFs that are not tied to any corporate bonds or anything like that. It's pure treasuries. And they can give a comparable yield to what you're getting from some of the higher yielding savings accounts and money markets now. So I thought that was a nice thing that they had coming along. That nothing major, but just know that that's out there. And the other advantage is if you've got a state with high income tax, you would not be subject to state tax on those dividends. So just an extra little boost to those. And we're also seeing a lot of talk about AI and the rise of AI, and everybody's exploring applications of what they're doing with it. And we're beginning to see it actually get incorporated into the software suites that we're using for financial planning. Mm. So it's going to be fun to see what actually comes of all this. A lot of people have played with ChatGPT, or they've heard of ChatGPT. And I have one client who's say early 80s, and a couple of weeks ago he called and he says, "Have you heard about this ChatGPT?" And I said, "Yeah, I've heard about it." He said, well, I just found out about it last week. And I said, well, what you been doing with it? Oh, he had planned a trip. They're taking a trip out west, and he wanted to drive X number of hours a day and stop in certain places and see the sights. And he says, ChatGPT just put the whole thing together for me. And I said, well, very good. I'm impressed.
That is impressive.
What else have you done with it? Oh, he was analyzing some artwork with it and getting some feedback on his wife's paintings and things like that. And I said, well, that's cool. I never thought about that. And then I said, well, what else with you do it? Have you done with it? And he said, well, I put my portfolio in there and it tells me I've got enough cash. And I was like, oh no, I'm going to be out of job here pretty soon. It's true. It's coming for us all.
The Terminator advisor is here.
That's right.
Oh, that's funny. It's amazing. You know, there's the, what I kind of break it down as the times I intentionally use AI and then the unintentional, like I don't even know that I'm using AI. And it sounds like you're having that slip into your financial planning world a little bit more where you're not having to go to the third party to seek out the use of an AI. It's just, it's already working its way into the software. It's working its way into, you know, just your normal day-to-day life. I see that in emails now with it trying to like make you write the email for you and all those kinds of things. It's interesting how it just slowly sort of creeps into your everyday life without you even having to go seek it.
And it's really nice because it puts together some very nice reports and summaries and analysis, you know, stuff that would take hours to put together. It just, it kind of does for you. And it doesn't do it perfectly. So let's be fair. The limitation of AI is at the end of the day, you still really need to understand your field and what feedback it's providing may or not be correct. It may or not be applicable to your specific situation. But man, it's a great way to get maybe 80% of the way there.
Yeah.
And then you can go back and fix those little things that aren't perfect about the AI.
I'll tell you one of my uses for it over the last 6 months, I've been using it for this specific thing a little bit more. I tend to be a bit verbose in emails. And so, especially if it's like a coaching email or an equipment list that I've got to send somebody or a how-to or even a sales email that recaps something, I tend to be a bit too verbose. And I know people just don't have time to read these long emails that I tend to send. So I do my long email, type it all out, I drop it into ChatGPT and tell it to make me more concise. And then it spits out a, you know, half-length version of what I wrote that still has all the essential information in it. I make a tweak or two, and then I'm able to send that out. And I've noticed over the last 6 months or so, my response rate has certainly increased. So I use it kind of in like an assistant role in that way, and it's helped me out a lot in those specific tasks.
I think the most unique use that I have seen just occurred this past week. My daughter, turning 16, had a few of her friends over, and they were talking about boyfriends, and one of them had a particularly bad boyfriend, or they'd done something when the consensus was he needs to go. And so they went downstairs. I didn't hear from them for a little bit, and they came back upstairs and they said, well, we did it. She broke up with her boyfriend. She put into ChatGPT how to break up with a boyfriend. It generated a script. She called the boyfriend, basically read the script, and it was done and over. And I thought, well, that was so cool. Like I always struggled for what to say or getting in these awkward situations. And if it'll script it out for you and get you through it, I thought, that's very clever. I didn't know you could do that.
That's a brave new world, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I'm sure ChatGPT, if we wanted to, we could go the reverse. And rather than the breakup, we could probably have ChatGPT come up with all sorts of pickup lines, you know,
I bet.
Customize it to our personalities.
Yeah, and if you don't have the courage to even say it, you can just text, you know, take copy from ChatGPT, paste it, and see how it works.
That's right. That is a pretty cool use of it. I'll share one last one with you, and this one's just a very humorous one. I have a client that sends me posts for, you know, blogging and notes and things like that, and he's still a double spacer, and so I guess he's been like that his whole life, you know, double space after every period. And it drives me crazy. And I used to have to go through before posting and take out manually all the double spaces in the post. And I was like, boy, this has to be like the lowest level task I do as a human being. just hitting delete 1,000 times between all these spots. Now I can drop the whole thing into ChatGPT and say, change nothing about this script other than getting rid of all the double spaces. It goes, spits it out, copy and paste it back in, done.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I was like, now that's AI. That's your greatest use right there. You just saved me. Like the time ratio that you just saved me is incredible.
It's huge. Yeah. Yeah. There's going to be all kinds of efficiencies that are going to come from it. But yeah. The doomsdayers do think, you know, just millions and millions of jobs are going to be eliminated. But if you have young children that are college age coming up into the workforce, you know, definitely they still need the critical thinking skills, learning how to communicate. The mock trial that we were at really gave them an opportunity to, you know, verbally express themselves, put an argument together, respond to, you know, real life situations. And they need that skill, but they are also going to need to know how to apply ChatGPT to it. And it's the combo that I think will be the people who are most lethal in tomorrow's job market.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you on that front. All right. So ETFs, you mentioned those, the rise of AI. Anything else catching your eye before we head to Doge?
The one that's kind of connected or tangent to Doge is what's going to happen with taxation. We're hearing a ton of talk, you know, out of Trump about eliminating the income tax and the IRS and switching entirely to tariffs. And, you know, that was a 1800s era taxation system, and we did not have the social programs of Social Security and Medicare and whatnot. It was a very different time, but it was very prosperous for us. So I would just, before I got too excited or too alarmed about any of those, I would just take a step back and just let's wait and see what actually transpires, because the payroll taxes that fund Social Security and Medicare and those pay-as-you-go systems, I don't know how you ever convert that to a totally tariff-based system. It probably ended up with some kind of hybrid. But I did see Steve Forbes coming back out and saying, hey, flat tax. You know, he's been talking about it for decades. And that would be nice to see a great simplification or something, you know, built into prices that, you know, more accurately tipped. I think the key thing that Trump is looking at is making a fair system for the U.S. For so many years, we've allowed other countries to subsidize industries, China, or have tariffs against us that we don't have against them, Europe in the auto space, Canada. Yeah, so there are some imbalances there that need to be rectified, and it either make it free trade on both sides or make it fair trade. So again, just give it time. Let's see where this all settles out. I'm not making any conclusions about it just yet.
Yeah, a little hard to judge it, you know, for what it's going to be, because it's constantly morphing, right? Like, they're going to take place tomorrow. Okay, we've put it off for a month. Okay, now this has happened. Okay, this is a bargaining chip that's been used. Okay, now this has been moved over here. Still going to happen, but now we're delaying it over here. So it's like, all right, we don't know how this is all going to come out just quite yet.
And again, the Trump is all big, bombastic, crazy idea. Behavioral finance, it's called like anchoring. You throw this ridiculous price out there or this crazy number out there, either high or low, and somehow that anchors people at that spot. And then as you move off of that, then your original or normal price seems, you know, like a deal in comparison. It's a tactic. It's a strategy. People aren't used to politicians doing it. So that's a little bit of what's rattling everybody. So again, just stay calm. Let's just see what actually happens. Give it time. Yep. There's other variables in place besides just what Donald Trump does.
All right. I think you've teed us up nicely for Doge and the Elon impact and however else you want to kind of couch this new development in 2025 here.
All right. I need to tread very carefully on this one, because I did not realize how sensitive this subject was on either side of the coin. This is does call it the Doge coin.
Yep.
And there's heads and tails on it. And I will admit the majority of my clients are conservative leaning. They are optimistic about what's happening. They would like to see cuts and reductions to government. And I didn't think there was anything of particular panic about what was happening. I was rather enjoying seeing the idea of somebody come in and begin to look at and scrutinize all the government spending. And I've been following what Milei has done down in Javier Milei in Argentina. He's calling him. He was the guy with the chainsaw and, you know, flat out, cut this, cut that, get it out. And he's really turning Argentina around. And that place has been notoriously a financial basket case for better part of a century. And he's got inflation down. And I look at what's happening here as being like a very necessary step in reorganization, like any corporation or business would do that's coming off the rails financially. But apparently some people are so hyper fixated on the personality or the emotion or the idea of Elon Musk, and he's the billionaire, he's the richest guy in the world. And of course, Trump is highly, highly polarizing. And so the first thing that tipped me off was I got an email, and he said, hi guys, hope you can help me out with some advice. My clients are sending articles and are worried about their money in banks being hacked by Musk. And there's a link here to some article about it. And then another client sent me this email concerned that Schwab is in cahoots with MAGA. There's MAGA money at Charles Schwab. And I clicked on these articles. I thought, my God, this stuff is not making it into my feed. I'm not hearing any of this stuff. And said, finally, I don't know about you, but I've never had to invest in the midst of heavy tariffs while taking over the Gaza Strip, Canada, Mexico, Greenland, and deporting people to all corners of the globe. And I thought, wow, this is like a totally different worldview and perspective than what I was seeing it from. So I called and talked through it, and I looked at a couple of these articles, and I said, this looks sort of sensational, and redirected, or my advice to her was, go back over a historical time period that the client had lived through, remind them of all of the crazy things that have happened at a time that they remember, but didn't have a lot of money invested. And then you look and you see that there are the savings and loan crisis, and you had presidential assassination attempts and big political upheavals and major legislative changes and Y2K and September 11 and all the things that we've lived through, and put it in perspective so that they can realize that what's happening today really is just, it's like a different day, another flavor of sensationalism or concerned. And really what they should do is just, turn off the news, take this look back. Or, even better, tune into the other side. Everybody seems to be very dialed into one channel, one flavor of news, one take. And it really concerns me because it's just polar extremes that, A, this is either the salvation and the new golden age, or Musk is hacking our accounts and they're taking the government down and we're headed to oblivion. I was like, the truth is somewhere in between. It's not either of those, but it's going to be somewhere in between. But I don't know. Are you seeing this anywhere? It kind of snuck up on me, but now that I see it, it seems to be everywhere.
Yeah, exact same kind of takes, I guess I would say. I've got a family member who could be caught up, kind of an extended family member who could be caught up in the layoffs of the federal government, a federal employee. So I'm getting information and kind of hearing certainly that anxiety and perspective and the whys and a lot of those, that side of the coin. So that's interesting to see that perspective. There's definitely room for improvement, I would say, in the how things are done. This is sort of like, even if you like what's being done, it's the how it's being done. Mm-hmm. And then for someone who doesn't like what's being done in the first place, the how just makes it that much worse, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And, Trump likes to be a comedian. Elon loves to be a troll and his own comedic way of being, satirical or ironic or sarcastic, maybe a combination of all of those. And then you throw in memes and just online quips and one-liners. And that's what can sometimes make this stuff really hard to keep up with. Is it's like, it would be nice if somebody would just say, hey, I'm the adult in the room. We're making these cuts. Here's another change that we've made. We've done this just without all the trolling, right? Like, because that would help take some of this emotion out of it and just put the facts on the table. So I feel like that just stokes people even more. I mean, I was talking with someone who I respect quite a bit. And they were concerned, kind of, and they're in that category of people that are more just concerned over everything that's happening and what they're reading in the news. And something that I thought was interesting was we were actually talking about cryptocurrency, and I was just telling them about what cryptocurrency is, trying to explain it just at a very basic level. And they were asking about Doge, and they were like, so they started Doge after, like, they launched this coin to scam people after they did this government thing? And I'm like, no, it's the other way around. The coin was first and has been out for a long time. And it just happens to have the same initials as, you know, just made for an easy carryover into this government agency. But that rubbed him really the wrong way. Like, even though his concern was it was launched as a scam on the American people today, it was like it then became more concerning that this whole government agency was built off of a meme and off of a joke.
The Doge meme existed first,
right?
Then Dogecoin came along sort of as a joke, I guess, or a,
right.
It's a copy of Bitcoin, but it was not meant to be really serious. Elon Musk took a shine to it, and now and Doge, didn't it just start as a typo? Like somebody was trying to write dog, and they got an E, it was like doggy or something like that.
Oh, I don't even know. Yeah, maybe.
I think it was one of those typo things that turned into a meme that now has turned into a
government agency.
Right.
But that was part of their, something that simple, right? It was part of the concern of like, oh my gosh, we're dealing with people's lives and we're laying people off and firing them left and right and causing chaos, right? And everyone, that's a word commonly used lately, is causing all this chaos, and it's just done with this joking attitude. So I do think that rubs people the wrong way, no matter kind of what side you're on, that can maybe affect you a little bit.
Understandable, yeah. And again, I take people back to the reality of what's happening. And so let's do take that more sober, serious, factual look at it. And we've talked about this for years on this podcast. And the government debt, I think when we started talking, Walter, was at 23 or 25 trillion or something like that.
It would be kind of fun to go back to a first episode or two and see when we first talked about the debt, what it was, but you're probably right.
Yeah, and now it's at $36.5 trillion. That is $107,000 of debt per citizen, or $323,000 of debt per taxpayer. So if you're a taxpayer, you're in the minority because there's a lot of children and non-working age people. There's a lot of non-employed or non-working. So per taxpayer, that's a pretty big load. That's a starter house in today's market that people are burdened with. If you had to put it on your balance sheet.
Even with Doge's impact right now, that number is still heading in the wrong direction, right?
And the interest on that debt has now surpassed $1 trillion per year. Okay, we spend, $800-900 billion on defense? And that's a massive line item in our budget. And now just the interest on our debt is larger than our defense budget. And it's not going away. I mean, it's not like we've got this thing on a 5-year balloon note and we're going to pay it off or amortized or anything like that. This is just ongoing, continuing to add to it. Interest rates have gone up, and that number will just continue to rise in this current environment as the debt that was issued during the low interest rate era matures and we issue new treasuries. Well, if you're a saver, you know, going back to how we opened, if you want to go buy the U.S. Treasury 30-day treasury note, you can get a nice yield on it. But the government is having to pay that interest. So $1 trillion a year plus. It's 4.5% to 5% of GDP just to tread water.
By the way, you were in the right neighborhood when we started podcasts in 2019. It was kind of the 22, 23 trillion range. So yeah, we've gone up over 10 trillion plus since that.
Yeah, 40-45% increase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible.
So, and you know, you look at that and you also have to look at Social Security obligations, Medicare, Medicaid, VA payments, pensions. Those are all obligations of the government. And to make those payments as well, I did not look at the numbers on those, but if you calculated the unfunded liabilities of the federal government, the number just gets even more massive than that $323,000. So a lot of that gets paid with current payroll taxes and things like that with direct funds coming in. But the payments are about to outstrip the inflows. And we're going to have a crisis early to mid 2030s on funding for Social Security and Medicare if we don't do stuff between now and then.
Such a huge issue and deal. And so Doge came onto the scene to try and correct this, and they're eliminating programs and definitely, the firings have started in certain sectors now, left and right. I mean, can this realistically put much of a dent into what we're doing?
That's the $1 million question.
Yeah. And or the trillion dollar question, I guess.
Yeah. It's a multi-trillion-dollar question, right? So I thought about it. I was listening to another podcast and they were talking about it this way. If you had debt service on our debt is $1 trillion plus, well, that's larger than many other countries around the world. So if you were a average citizen on an average street in America, and you had been burning up the credit cards and racked up a ton of credit card debt, such that just the interest payments on your credit cards were larger than all of your neighbors' average annual incomes for just the debt payments on your credit card, never mind your own mortgage and your own cost of living. And someone came in and said, hey, I think this little debt thing and these credit card uses is getting a little out of hand. Why don't we take a look and let's just pull out all the statements, pull out all the past spending, and let's just review it to see what things we might be able to cut and start stripping out everything unnecessary and get this under control. And then as you made that probe, maybe there was one line item or two that you pointed out that said, hey, maybe you don't need this XYZ item. And all of a sudden the massive protest becomes about whether or not that line item is necessary or to be cut, or you're having a very strong reaction to it. No, the crisis is not that we're going to cut this one line item, or we're even talking about cutting one line item. It's worth $36 trillion in debt. Your interest payments are larger than the average neighbor's annual total income. We have to get aggressive. We have to get serious about it. And protesting one line item on the ledger and objecting to a particular department or job being eliminated is what people are reacting to. So the problem is way bigger than what people are even seeing and having the reaction to. So I'm not sure how to convey that or get people to look at it that way. But the reality is a lot of government jobs are not productivity. They don't increase GDP. For example, if I was the earner in my family and I made $100,000 a year and I wanted to increase my family income, I would need to send wife and kids out to get jobs. Mm-hmm. Well, if on the other hand, I said, well, don't go out and get jobs. I'll hire you and I'll pay each of you $20,000 a year. And so now I'm making $100,000 a year and they're all making 80 because I'm paying them 20 each. So our income has not gone up to $180,000 a year. It's still the amount that I've got coming in. So hiring my own family does nothing to increase the net resources of our household. And government jobs are a lot like that. I mean, there is a certain amount of regulation and administration and law enforcement and things that need to be done for sure. But, if like any good big corporation, I deal on the other side of this with corporate employees who have been subject to layoffs, downsizings, mergers and acquisitions. And you want to talk about a merciless process. That is not a touchy-feely kumbaya session. A lot of people that were in their peak earning years, they were a few years away from retirement. They were looking forward to really bolting down and securing their finances, coming into the final years of the approach. boom, they're out of job and, you know, they don't have benefits now. And it's a harsh reality. So to think that all government jobs, you know, should be immune from that process is, you know, it's a unfortunate but necessary process sometimes.
I think it's something we all need to just kind of try to strip some of the emotion out and look at it practically, look at it rationally. I know that doesn't make it more palatable for some, but I think if the more of us who can try and at least reach some sort of common ground and understanding this, finding truth, realizing that there's a problem that needs to be fixed, and we've got to at least work on some solutions to get there rather than sticking our heads in the sand or just making the problem worse, we've got to try and at least make some inroads into this. And, you know, I don't think you can fix any. I think if you can ask any person, Brian, who's ever made it out of debt themselves, even a small amount of debt, or someone who's made it out of a large amount of debt, it doesn't happen easily and mm-hmm. without pain. Mm-hmm. It takes sacrifice. It takes painful days.
Concerted efforts,
frustrations, cuts. But talk to anybody that's made it out of that situation, and they feel like their life has changed forever.
Liberated, yep.
And liberated, and all the good things that have happened to them, they could probably tie back to that getting out of debt. So it's a very worthwhile mission to at least explore and figure out how we're going to get there.
Well, and if you can get to the other side of it, yeah. too, I mean, if you have a trillion dollars to pay in interest payments, mm-hmm. how much better would that be if we were spending $1 trillion a year on actual infrastructure?
Yeah.
Or better health care for seniors or people in need? There's a lot of things that amount of money could go to that would be productive, enhance our society, our economics, and I just hate to see it being spent on debt service, because that is a kind of a dead loop or spiral that you get yep. you can easily get caught in. Let me just wrap this up here,
because sure.
we could probably go on all day about it. But obviously, the big idea is that, you know, if we can reduce tax burden, move non-productive workers to productive positions, and again, I'm going to pull back in AI. I think there's a lot of opportunity and potential in the technology space to create trillions of dollars worth of wealth in the coming years. And if you can get enough economic growth, we can actually outgrow the debt, put it down as a percentage of GDP. We're at like 130%, which is a higher level of debt than we had right at the end of World War II. As a percentage of GDP. So it's either pay down the debt or grow GDP like crazy. Well, that's kind of a Reagan-esque era idea. And Reagan ended up with larger deficits and debt. And he was very heavily criticized at the time because of it. And to be fair, we were waging a Cold War arms race at the same time. That was where a lot of the extra spending went. But eventually, deregulation and the reduced taxes did lead to a great boom in the 90s, and we had the last balanced budgets of the last 50 years happened in the 90s under Clinton. So it can be done, but it takes many years. It's going to be a long cycle, and we didn't get here overnight, and we're not going to get out of it overnight. But I certainly think if we focus on the right things and have the right attitude about it, we can definitely get there, because we really don't have any other choice.
Yeah, keep that optimistic attitude. Hopefully more of us can adopt that here in the future as well. If you are kind of listening to today's show and you're just, I don't know how all this is going to impact me, or I'm concerned, or hey, maybe the crux of it is just, well, you know, this is great to look at things globally, but I'm still worried more about my portfolio, my retirement, my future. How is this all going to impact it? If you don't know how increased taxes or decreased taxes or cuts and things like that, or even a job loss if you're maybe in, you know, possibly going to be caught up in some of these layoffs or the threat of AI. Maybe you feel like you're really, you know, at risk of losing your job in your final working years because of this, you know, perhaps coming down the pike, and you don't know how all that's going to impact your retirement and what you can sustain and withstand. Those are all great questions that lead to a solid planning process, and that's what Brian takes clients through pretty much on a daily basis, helping them put together a solid plan for their financial future, for retirement, and help navigating you through those ups and downs and building a plan that can withstand many of these things. That's what he's been doing for 20 years. That's how long he's been helping people plan for financial planning and retirement. He is also a certified financial planner professional, which means he meets the highest standards of training and ethics, always putting your best interests first when building these plans. So you can take advantage of a complimentary 15-minute call with Brian to see if you're a good fit, to get clarity on your financial goals and prepare for that more secure tomorrow. All you have to do if you want to take advantage of that 15-minute review is to book a call by going to livingworth.com. The button there says book a call, so that's very easy to follow, and it's at livingworth.com. Or again, you can call 706-451-9800. That's 706-451-9800. That contact information is also in the description of today's show, so you can find it easily. Well, Brian, I hope your sneezing doesn't turn into a broader sickness and that our warmer and brighter days are ahead, my friend. And thanks for breaking down this difficult topic on today's show, but appreciate your insight.
Hopefully gave some insights to it, and yeah, we'll shake this winter crud off and be on to better things here soon.
You got it. We'll have another great episode next month, folks, so come back and join us for that. Until then, we'll see you next time on Make the Dough Rise.
Make the Dough Rise is brought to you by Living Worth Wealth Advisors, with a central office in Greensboro, Georgia, but serving the Lake Country and beyond. The podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all your favorite podcasting apps. Subscribe today and never miss an episode. Just search for Make the Dough Rise with Brian Dough. You can also visit MakeTheDoughRise.com to listen to recent episodes. If you'd like to contact the show or schedule a complimentary financial review with Brian and the team, just go to MakeTheDoughRise.com and get in touch through the website. Or call 706-451-9800. Thanks for listening to Make the Dough Rise.
Investment advisory services offered through Main Street Financial Solutions, LLC. Information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute investment, tax, or legal advice. Information is obtained from sources that are deemed to be reliable, but their accurateness and completeness cannot be guaranteed.